Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. In case you thought I was missing in action, I am back and I am starting the fall season of Literary Viewpoints with Barry Kerwin from France. Haha, 66 Retro. This book is going to keep you so spellbound that you're going to want to read the next one, which is 37 hours, and I just convinced him to print it out for me because Fran's got to know what happens next. And guess what? There's a third one, so you just watch out. So, good morning, Barry, and how are you today?
Good morning, Fran. I'm great, thanks. Yeah, I'm calling from France, so it's afternoon here, but I'm fine.
That is so cool. That's, you know, it's so exciting to be able to talk to somebody from another country and then read something so beautiful as this. So when you created this novel, what research did you do into diving a 66 metric? By the way, I looked it up to make sure I would get it straight, which I did. What about your real life experiences as a diver did you put into this novel? Because that's what made it really, you know, more realistic, because you actually know what it entails.
Yeah, exactly. So I have dived deeper. So 66 meters is 218 feet, and it's a particular depth at which oxygen poisoning happens. And I was diving in Norway, and three of us were diving, and we got into trouble, and I had to rescue one of the guys. And I actually blacked out at 64 meters, so I know what it's like to dive at this depth. And that was at night. It was pretty dark, and pretty scary, but obviously I survived. So I've done quite a bit of deep diving. Mm-hmm. Deepest is 76 meters, so that's my deepest dive ever.
You are so brave, let me tell you, because I know that I can't even go into shallow water unless it's just about an inch. So forget that.
Yeah.
No, serious. It's like too much. So Nadia and Kayla are sisters.
Yeah.
How did they get separated? And why did Nadia allow herself? This was really mind-boggling. Why did Nadia allow herself to be sold for 5 years and complete 10 jobs? I know they were wrong, but she did it anyway. What was her motivation? And why would she do that?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's complicated family. So they lost their father when Nadia was 14, and Katya's a few years older, so she left home in sort of rural Russia and went to Moscow to find the big city lights, and Katya got caught up with a gangster called Kaninsky. So Nadia joined Katya in Moscow, but then she kind of got trapped into this situation where she went to prison for a brief time for something she didn't do, and to get her out, Kaninsky managed to get her out of prison, but on the basis that she would work for him for 5 years. So, and he also had Katya caught, if you like, trapped in his little world. So she was almost his slave, to be honest. So that was a deal: 5 years, 10 ops, and then Nadia and Katya would be released. And of course, she never knew whether that was going to be a promise that was going to be honored. That's how she got trapped.
Well, she reminds me of me a lot. She's very determined, very persistent.
She is.
And won't give up until you get what you want. That's why I liked her. She reminds me of me, because, you know, until you get it done, I'm not going to give up until I do it right. So tell us about why she was so determined to win and to beat him. Because I was mad. I just wanted to go over there and get him forever.
Yeah, no, she's very determined. I mean, the idea for Nadia came partly from Stieg Larsson's books, you know, the girl with the dragon tattoo. So you've got Lisbeth Salander, who's also a very determined woman. And I like this kind of, I like reading this kind of female character. I'd like to meet. But she really also has no choice. She's between a rock and a hard place. So, but the point is, she never gives up. And even in all three books, she gets kicked down occasionally, but she always gets up and turns it around. And that's just really who she is.
Yeah, she is. She's a brave soul, let me tell you. So, tell us about this Kaninsky. I don't like him at all. And how is he using Kayla as a bait, so that Nadia will do whatever he says? I mean, it says, oh, my God, Connie, and you don't hear from her yet. So you don't even know if she's really alive until you know.
Yeah, Kandinsky's a slime ball. He really is. But
yeah.
he's very clever. He's a very wily guy. And he knows exactly how to manipulate people. So he sends Nadia these little videos on her mobile phone where she'll see Katya smiling. Then the next thing she sees is a shallow grave with a bag next to it. So the implied threat, you don't deliver the rose, which is what they're after, then your sister's going to end up in this hole in a bag. So and Nadia wants to kill him. She really wants to end him, but of course she can't. He's back in Moscow. She's somewhere else. So yeah, he really manipulates people, and also with others, even some of the other kind of thugs, he manipulates them just as much. He's really a kingpin, a nasty piece of work. Yeah,
he really is, and I probably would have volunteered to go with her to kill him if she would allow me to find out where he is.
I've had quite a few readers have told me they want his address.
I wanted to, you know, I wouldn't go down in the water, but I would have helped her on top. I definitely am good at, you know, getting people that get me angry. This you know, not good at all. But So explain this thing that they wanted her to find. What is the rose, and why does everybody want this? And if she gives it to him, what makes her think that she'll get what she wants, her sister?
Hmm.
And then she does something that's quite unexpected when she gets it.
Yeah, so the item is called the rose, and there's a little bit of mystery about the rose throughout the book, so you're not quite sure what it is until near the end.
Yeah.
But basically, it's a communication device. It's called Rose, which is short for Rosetta Stone, so that's something that can help you unravel languages. The idea is, if you have this, you could, in theory, contact a nuclear submarine and give it missile launch codes. So, which would be undisputed. So then you could tell a nuclear sub to launch and fire on Moscow or London or Washington, D.C. So that's why everyone is terrified of this particular weapon. It's really it's not that big. It's the size of a big tin of food, but it just has this weapon of mass destruction feel about it. And, of course, she's not entirely convinced he's going to let Katya go if she hands it over. But while she has it, she knows she's still in play and Katya's still alive. So that's why she has to keep hold of it and has to get it back when she loses it.
That is scary. That is scary. You really can't. You really don't know what to do when it comes to somebody that's a terrorist or something like that, or that has something that you want. So she finds it and she doesn't keep it. Okay. So describe her relationship with her parents, and why doesn't she want to be like her father? Tell us about her and the promise that she made to her mother.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. She comes from a very dysfunctional family, I'm afraid. So her father, she really loved her father, but what happens after he's dragged away early on in the book when she's 14 by special forces and taken away and executed. And so later on she finds out why, that he actually assassinated people. So she realizes he was a killer, not just working for special forces, but he was an assassin. And the only thing he left her was his Beretta, which becomes her weapon of choice, Beretta pistol. Now, her mother is estranged from Nadia's father. I think Nadia's father used to play around a bit, and so there was no love between him and her mother. So her mother absolutely wants Nadia to be the opposite of her father, to never kill. And, so Nadia is kind of forced into promising her mother she will never, ever kill anyone. Her mother's very religious and is sure Nadia will go to hell where her father is. And so Nadia is, on the one hand, her job description pretty much is to be able to be ready to kill people because she's working for this gangster, but she's made this promise which she really, really takes to heart and really tries to uphold as long as she can. Meanwhile, there are these terrible people after her who will kill in the blink of an eye to get hold of this rose, and her sister is being held by gangsters. So she's really in this terrible dilemma throughout most of the book.
Yeah. I know. I mean, every time I read about the dives, I had to catch my breath and pray to have an oxygen tank. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
I could feel the tension of all those people going down under the water and saying, am I going to make it? Am I going to find what I want? And if I find what I want, am I going to get out of what I wanted? I mean, that's scary. Because I wonder how much oxygen you really need to go down there. So who is Jansen? And he had a relationship with Nadia, but he didn't play fair either. He betrayed her. How come? These not nice people here.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, there's a lot of gangsters. In fact, I should say there's kind of two sides to this novel. Yeah, there's the gangsters, and then but there's also the other side, which we can talk about later, which are the normal people who Nadia comes in contact with, and they get caught up as well. But, yeah, Jansen was, he attempted to double-cross Kadinsky, and she was working with him. So with him, she steals a rose in the first place in London, and that's really the first underwater scene, which is in the Thames. I actually went to the Thames exactly where it happened and scoped it all out, checked that the Thames was deep enough to hide a helicopter. But Jansen double-crosses them, and that's quite a scary scene. Quite a few readers have said that's almost a difficult scene to watch, if you like. Of course, she makes it out of there alive, but almost no one else does, actually. So, he's a scary person right at the beginning, yeah.
There's a lot of scary people here. So, yeah. This is like her mind was in, and sometimes her mind was in every single direction. And after a while, you don't know who you're going to trust and who you can trust.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And I said, like, you should trust him. Are you sure you want to do this one? I don't know. Sometimes I just wanted to write something in the book and warn her on my own. So
yeah.
Who is Sammy, and why was Nadia concerned when he didn't show up at the expected time? That was very interesting.
Yeah. Sammy was. He was, if you like, a gangster, a baddie, but he was a good guy, and he always looked after Nadia.
Mm-hmm.
So he was her, aside from Katya, her sister, he was her only friend that she could turn to, because she was on missions all the time. So she was on missions with Sammy. And so after the incident with Jansen, Sammy and her have to split up, because they need to go separate ways, and she really hopes that Sammy will make it. And, of course, what we wish for doesn't always happen. So some people said to me it was a shame what happened to Sammy. But that was necessary for the plot. But, yeah, within the gangsters, there were some good people. And the relationship between her and Sammy was good. Nice one. Yeah.
Oh, but poor Sammy. It's dangerous to get into a mystery book and be a character, because you never know when you're going to wind up dead. And to think that there's actually someone out there that finally put me in her book. I can't wait for it to come out. And she made me evil.
Yeah.
And she must know something I don't know. Yeah, she said she made me evil. An evil somebody, an evil book lover of somebody. So who is Jake Saunders? And why does he become involved with Nadia? And who is he really?
Yeah, this is a question. So, one of the bylines for the book is the only person Nadia can trust is the one sent to spy on her. So Jake is a diver. He's a little bit broken, actually, because something happened with his son, and so he's a diver that he's ex MI6. So he's actually works for a spy organization. And they drag him back in when the rose is stolen. Because he's a diver, and they realize it's been held underwater somewhere. And so he has to pretend to just be a normal diver, and he comes into contact with Nadia, and they become friends. They become a little bit more than friends. But at the same time, he is there to spy on her. So you can imagine the conflicts that arise later as they get closer. It's hard for both of them. Because you're not just in Nadia's mind, sometimes you're in Jake's mind, and it's hard for him because he's lying to her at the same time as getting close. So that's and he begins to genuinely care for her, so he starts to lose his professional distance, if you like, from the whole situation. He gets dragged in closer towards Nadia.
That's dangerous to get to know these main characters in a book. Get to know them
yeah.
too well. You never know where you're going to wind up. That's not good. You gotta be careful, people. You never know what you get, what you want. So who is Lorne? She's another complex person here.
She is. I'll tell you a funny story, because she was not in the original book. And my editor said, okay, Jake needs a handler, because initially she wasn't there at all. And so I created this character called Lorne, who turned out to be quite interesting. She was really written into the book probably a month before it was published, so it was really fast. She's quite fascinating. She's very hard-nosed. She's a goodie, but she's very hard-nosed. She has some issues. She has some chips on her shoulder, but she and Jake used to be an item. So they used to be together. And so, but now they are very far apart. There is no love lost between them. And so, and of course, Lorne then has to come into contact with Nadia later on. So there's this kind of triangle towards the end of the book where Lorne meets Nadia, and there's this kind of tension. I quite like the character Lorne, actually. Even though I say she's a small character in this book, she appears in book two, actually, and I fleshed her out a bit more.
I was going to ask that question.
Two.
I wanted.
Yeah,
ask,
yeah.
I was going to ask, coming back to torture me some more. I can't wait to see who else you're going to bring back. Ha ha ha! And I want to know.
Yes. Yeah.
We won't say anything more about Lorne because we can't give away the other part of her. So.
No.
Why does she want him to do more? She wants Jake to do more than a job for M16. And why does she want the rose? Everybody wants this thing. I want this thing too. It sounds interesting. I want it.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. I mean, there's a bit of geopolitics there because it's developed by the British. So the Americans are a bit pissed. They didn't know the British were developing this, and they're quite insanely annoyed that it's been developed, and the Russians want it, the Chinese want it, the South Americans want it, so it's very much in demand. Lorne, I think, is just trying to get it back, really, to get it under wraps, because this thing is just too dangerous to be out there. And in fact, so in a sense, she's the one that wants to almost get rid of it, actually. Yeah, because they know that if anyone gets a hand on this, it's it would just change the balance of power globally. So yeah.
Yeah, but they can't get rid of it. We can't tell anybody why.
No.
But if you can't get rid of it, then they, you know, what are we going to do? With the next book, that would be very sad. So
yeah.
Tell us about Mike. And I mean, these dive scenes, I must have read them a million times. They're going like, oh my God, how did they do that? How come they're still alive, and how come they're not choking from water? So tell us about Mike, and tell us how you created the dive scenes with him and Nadia and Ben. That must be hard when three of them have to watch what the other one's doing to make sure they're okay.
So a lot of the diving with Nadia takes place in the Scilly Isles. So these are the, you know, if you were coming from America on an old ocean liner, the first part of the UK you would hit is the Scilly Isles. And there's a lot of wrecks there for that reason. So, there's these two brothers. And the main one is actually based on a real person who works down there. So I've dived down there, and I know this guy, so just changed his name. And, they're there all the time. But I've done most of the dives that are in the book. In the book, there's a wreck called the Suba, and it's based on a real wreck, which is lying almost vertical in the water from about 20 meters down to 66 meters. I actually had to do a rescue on that wreck, so I seem to have done more rescues than I should have. So these dive scenes, a lot of them are, they are adrenaline charged, because I can remember what it was like being down there. And as you say, you're always extremely conscious of how much air you've got. If you're diving that deep, you are watching your air gauge every 20 seconds. You're looking just to check it's still okay. And they go inside the wreck, and at one point they get nitrogen narcosis, which is like being drunk. Sometimes they're running out of air. And at one point, one of them has to take off his dive gear and go through this small hatch. And that's actually something me and another diver were going to do, and she stopped me from doing it. I started taking off my kicks. I really wanted to go through. So the idea is you take it off, you go through, and then they pass you the kit, and you put it back on again. And she just said, no way. And she was right. I mean, I had narcosis, so when you get narcosis, you don't think of risks in the same way, so you take more risks. So if you like, she rescued me that time. So yeah, a lot of these scenes, they're full of adrenaline because they were when they happened, you know. So I don't always dive like this, by the way. Some of my dives are nice and relaxed, and they're just fun.
Yes.
But I just picked on the six or seven in my diving career out of say 600 dives where things got
scary. God.
Yeah.
You're definitely a daredevil. I'm just glad I can cross the street and not get lost. Seriously, no. I mean, I know where I'm. I have a GPS in my head. I don't drive, but I know where I'm going. And then, you know, people wonder, how do you know where you're going if you don't drive? I don't need to have a GPS. I just know where I'm going. But it's like scary.
Yeah.
So, tell on the end of chapter 4. It's a good thing I wrote this in my notes here. Tell us the significance of 66 Metra as described at the end of chapter 4. I mean, like I said, everyone in these dives, they're like, I felt like I was in the water with them. Seriously, it was so perfectly described. I said, oh my God, I'm in there too. Just get me out.
Yeah. So 66 meters. So in the US it's 218 feet. So basically, Navy divers discovered this a long time ago. If you go to that depth, the oxygen that you're breathing, so you're breathing from an air tank. If you're breathing on air, then the oxygen partial pressure is going up, and it hits a certain level, and it actually becomes toxic. So there's like too much oxygen in your brain, and so you will start to. Typically, you hear a noise to begin with. So Mexican cave divers call it the wah-wah, so this goes wow, wow, and it gets louder and louder. And then you black out, and then if you don't rise, you will then go into convulsions, and then you will die. So say this happened to me just once in Norway, and I heard the noise, and I managed to put enough air in my jacket to inflate to send me up before I blacked out, because otherwise I would not be here talking to you. So it's not 66 meters is the general line, or 218 feet, but for some people it might be 60, for others it might be 70. I've dived to 76 meters in Malaysia without any oxygen poisoning. So it really can vary, depends how long you stay. But definitely, typically, most divers don't go below 30 meters, and even most instructors don't go below 50 meters. So 66 is really pushing it. There are ways to dive deep. You can dive deep, but then you're diving with special gases and mixtures, and that's really technical diving. So that's there's none of that in the book.
No, but I can imagine if you did a YouTube video of the first scene or the dives, I think a lot of people would watch it. Because
I should
even
do that.
You know, hook them over. Yeah, I mean, seriously, because I would sit and watch it, and at least I didn't have to be there in the water, but it might actually promote the book even more to do a YouTube video or any kind of video. You can even do it with your own phone and post it on Facebook, and then, of course, I'll make sure everybody sees it. So who is Stanton, and why does he think the rose should be his? Everybody wants this thing. This poor object probably just wants to be left alone. What happened? He got knocked off. Uh-oh. Cheryl, he got knocked off. He has to call back in, I hope. While we're waiting for the author to call back in, I hope that he calls back in from France, let me tell you that next week on August 10th, Gary Grossman will be here with Executive Actions. On the 15th, David Bell. Hold on, the author is back. And
about that, I got cut off.
I don't know what happened. And well, I should say, Blog Talk Radio. That happens a lot, and that's okay. We're fine. I filled in 10 seconds. So, what does he want this thing, Danton? Maybe they don't like Danton. Maybe they didn't like my question. I don't know.
So Danton. Actually, I should say Danton to me is the most scary character in the book, and he's actually based on a real person. I knew this guy, and I had to work with him, and he used to. People just found him very scary, including me. So when I was writing the book, I thought I have to put him in there. And I hope he never finds out that he's in this book, because I could be in trouble. That's obviously not his name. No, it's not his name. Maybe he would work it out. So Danton is really the nastiest guy, if you like. He has a lot of issues. He's an out-and-out killer, and he actually enjoys killing. He has a wound, and every time he kills somebody, the pain goes away. So it's it's kind of like a drug. It's kind of like a drug for him. So you don't want to be in the same building as this guy. Maybe not even the same city. So he initially has not much to do with this, but then he is forced by one of Kandinsky's guys to go to the Sillies to track down Nadia and to kill her, and he botches it, and he gets some of the friends that Nadia has made into very deep trouble, actually. So he is the he's the nastiest piece of work in the whole book. Of course, he comes to an untimely end, but not before he does quite a bit of damage.
Well, at least he's not coming back to scare me in the next book, but I'm sure there'll be
somebody else. No, he isn't.
Okay, so who is he really, and why does someone named Jorgensen is after Nadia? This poor girl can't have a day of peace. I mean, she doesn't know where to look and who to trust. So he's after her also. And then there's another guy that's after her, Adamson. I mean, really, Danton is deadly, and I really know who he is. So we can get rid of him, really. That's not good. And Adamson, so why do they want to kill her? Poor Nadia.
Yeah,
no chance.
Yeah, so Adamson is CIA, as is Jorgensen. Mm-hmm. And they've been, well, Jorgensen stays in the States, Adamson is over in Europe, and he's been sent to find out what's going on about the Rose, because, as I mentioned, the British haven't been entirely upfront with their American colleagues about what's going on. So he's sent there, but the CIA think that he is looking for it, which he is, but he's actually, he goes rogue. He's been approached by a South American drug gang who want this to get leverage against America, and he's promised an insane amount of money, so he goes rogue, and he wants the Rose for himself, and he's kind of almost like the guy next door, but he's not. I mean, he is a killer. He's CIA. He's killed people before, but he is a bit of an unusual character. He really loves his wife and his kid, who's not too bright, and he dreams of, you know, having the perfect family life. And he actually thinks he's doing the world a favor by finding the Rose and taking it out of play by giving it to the drug cartel, because he knows that they'll never actually use it. They just want it for leverage. So he thinks he's doing the world a favor, but he's prepared to kill quite a few people on the way to get his nice house in South America somewhere. So I found him an interesting character, and there's some interesting scenes between him and Nadia when they kind of both want to kill each other, but they can't because of the situation. And Nadia tries to get the one up on him, but she kind of, he's quite a smooth operator, but Nadia trumps in the end, so she gets her way.
It just proves that she's strong. She's not going to give up people. Watch out, you don't want to mess with this one.
Yeah.
Seriously.
No.
So we have somebody that may be nice. I don't know what to decide. Who is Pete, and what is his relationship with Nadia?
Yeah. So Pete is he's a real guy, and
oh good.
That's actually it's actually his name. His name. In fact, a friend of mine read the book. A friend of mine read the book and said,
"Hey,
You put Pete in and you left his name. So it's actually his name. He's a commercial diver in the Scillies. And I dived with him, I don't know, about 15 years ago. And he is such a cool guy, actually. And he's a hit with the women. And straight from the beginning, Nadia and Pete, there's kind of a spark. But it's quickly doused because she knows she's on a job. She's got to find the rose and get her sister back. So she quashes it really early. But he's a really cool diver. So he's a real person. And his brother Ben, who I know a lot of people find an interesting character, is completely fictitious. But Ben was actually for me based on Samwise from Lord of the Rings, who was with Frodo. He's like that kind of secondary character that is really nice, not particularly sexy or anything, but is really good to have around. And Nadia becomes friends with him. They're quite an interesting couple of characters, Ben and Pete. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm.
But we have, what happens then when they find out that, what happens to the Kennedy dive shop, and why do they think that she did it? I mean, she's really into everything. That was good.
She is. She's, this is where you find out she's been, you know, trained as a sort of spy by Kaninsky. So she wants to dive to get the rose, which is at 66 meters, and she realized there's this shop, Kennedy's, they're going to dive it the next, in a couple of days. So she thinks, well, they're going to find it, and she can't allow that to happen. So she plants an explosive in his shop. She makes sure everyone is out of the shop because she doesn't want to kill anyone. She still doesn't want to kill. So she does it very carefully, but basically she torches his shop. And that's quite a scene because everyone comes out at night to see this shop burning, and there's tanks of air, so some of those are exploding. There's flares which are going off like fireworks, and of course she's pretending to be shocked, but she's the one that set it off. And that's actually where somebody else he spots her and she spots him, and they realize who each other are, and she's been made actually. So this guy thinks, oh, that's Nadia, that's the one he's after, that's the guy from CIA who's after her. So yeah, that was fun. But Kennedy, he realized,
dive, yeah.
How
did you create that?
I've been to a million dive shops. So I just, it's not any particular one. They're all the same. They all smell of neoprene and rubber, and there's lots of shiny gear and black suits. It's like a fetish shop, really. But they're all the same. But in the book, Kennedy, he suspects Nadia. Because somebody saw somebody like her, and her reaction when he tackles her, she's caught off guard. And just in that split second, he thinks, hang on a minute. So he starts to suspect her. So then for Nadia, the clock is really ticking before he goes to the police. And she's brought in. And she can't let that happen. If she's taken in by the police, she can't get it back. Her sister's going to die. So, yeah.
That's why the ending of the book scared me. So, in Chapter 7, how did you describe the waters that they headed into in Chapter 7? Were these more dangerous than the ones in Chapter 4?
Oh, just remind me, Chapter 7. What's in Chapter 7?
There was another dive, and then they headed into those dives. They headed into the water.
Yeah. So, there's several. There's six chapters which are basically underwater, and this one they're basically trying to Nadia has to get what's called dived up. You can't just, if you haven't dived for 6 months, you can't just dive to 50 or 60 meters. You're going to get narcosis. Mm-hmm. You're going to get oxygen poisoning. So they go on a shallower dive, and but she gets narcosis, and that's really the first time you see the wreck, the Suba. So it's really frustrating. She's at about 40 meters, and she's on the actual wreck where the rose is at the bottom of this wreck at 66 meters. And so she knows it's there, and she gets down to about 48 meters. And so she feels she's so close, but she gets narcosis, she gets disoriented, she can't really function anymore, and Jake rescues her. And she's really annoyed at herself. She thinks, you know, damn it, I was within 20 meters. But that's the way diving is. You know, you can feel you're really close, but it doesn't matter. It's physiology. Your body's going to react. It's not something you can consciously control. So she has to then, and then she thinks she's blown it. That, you know, but they talk around. They say, well, look, you dive some more, and then you'll be able to dive down that deep. So. That's what happens. Yeah. But
well,
that situation where she... Sorry.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, this situation where she gets narcosis...
Yeah.
I mean, the first time it happens to you, you can feel like you're drunk and you can be very happy. But sometimes you get disoriented and you start to get... you start to panic. And it's really like you're on an emotional roller coaster, and you're not in control. So the only thing you have to do is go up. You can go up 5 meters, and it clears. And it's like waking up from a dream. You think, whoa. Mm-hmm. And then you're perfectly fine. So it's not like getting drunk where it takes you hours to get. You just need to go up, and you're going to be fine instantly. So it's very depth dependent.
You know, it's safer than liquor, maybe. Who knows?
So Katia,
I mean, seriously, super toe. Katia was high on the video that was sent to Nadia.
Yeah.
So what was the purpose of these short videos? And what was she supposed to do as a result of seeing them? I mean, this tore her apart to see her sister like that. And he was using her for more than just saying, hi, good morning. We know that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's keeping Nadia on a tight leash, Kadinsky. And he's just making sure... she sticks to the plan, and of course Nadia, she keeps having delays. The weather turns bad, so nobody can dive. And meanwhile, her sister is getting closer to being killed. These videos, they're really tearing Nadia apart, and that's just the way Kadinsky operates. He just keeps people on a very tight leash and keeps twisting the screw. Keep them under pressure, and I mean, to some extent it works. You know, she she does get the rose, she gets it back, but she could have done it without this. Yeah.
Well, then it would have, you know, delayed some of the excitement or whatever. And when they read the ending, oh my God! I mean, you can hold your breath on that one, but not going to reveal that part. So we have another character that hates Nadia. This poor girl can't, you know, she needs a personality change, or they do, because really. So who is Elise, and why does she hate her? And what is her relationship with Jake? This poor girl can't win. I mean, she may as well just not be friends with anybody at the rate she's going here.
No, she has better luck in book two with friends, I can say. So she has more friends in book two and in book three. Anyway, Elise is also partly based on two real people. One of the, as a friend of mine, she said, please can I be in your book? And I said, okay. So I put her in. But Elise is somebody that who's in love with Jake, and they did have a fling a couple of years ago, but it was really... To Jake, it was just a fling. He just lost his son, and he was particularly upset. And so he's never been, to him, it was just a one-night stand, but to Elise, it was a lot more. So Elise is always hoping when she sees Jake come back to the Sillies that, you know, she can win him back. And it's very apparent early on that Jake is interested in Nadia. And so Elise is, that's it. It's another love triangle. So we've got Lorne on one side, and we've got Elise on another. So Elise is a diver. She's a very experienced diver, very good diver. She gets caught up in this. So something happens, as you know, which I can't talk about, between Elise and Nadia and Danton, one of the real baddies. So part of what I wanted to do in this book was bring some ordinary people into the book. So imagine, you know, it was just me or you suddenly came into contact with this world of Nadia and Kadinsky and other people. And that's part of the reason I wrote the book. So a lot of thrillers are just about baddies or, you know, larger-than-life characters. And I put these very simple, real characters in there, like normal people, who suddenly came into contact with all this espionage, and they don't know quite how to react, and they're just sort of sucked into this world, and they didn't ask for it. And that was, for me, part of the attraction of writing this book. And Elise is particularly one of these characters who gets drawn in. And even Nadia wishes that she wasn't drawn in. But that's the way it happens. She's kind of like drawn in as collateral. So, yeah.
Mm. She doesn't want to be collateral. She'd rather have money used as collateral. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, who is Klaus and who is Gary? But before I forget, because I don't want to forget. Okay. Next week on the 10th, Gary Grossman will be here with Executive Actions, and I had the pleasure of meeting him at the Thriller Fest. He is really cool, and he's very, very nice, and he's excited. David Bell will be here on the 15th with Bring Her Home. You want to read a really great book? Oh, my God, is that good. And Dr. Rachel Hux is going to be here on 8/17 to talk about To Fly Again, and it's a true story about her son's unfortunate journey with bipolar disorder. It's a really a compelling book. It's really good. On the 23rd, we have All Signs Point to Murder. Aha, you better watch out for that one. And on the 29th, Dark Harvest. And I'm not going to tell you what that's about, but you could figure if you know stem cells and stuff like that. That book was so fantastic, and it scared the daylights out of me. And that's only August. My show's booked until the end of December, when I will be interviewing on the 11th D.P. Lyle, who writes for CSI, Criminal Minds, and Law and Order. How about that, everybody? That's just a start. And if you want new books, 66 Metra, Labor Day is coming up. Presents are good. A couple of boxes of those. The binding is fantastic. The writing desk is great. The amendment killer is great. And those are the ones that are, and the last girl. Those are the ones I almost finished this week. I finished three so far. So let's go on and talk more about the next two characters. Who is Klaus and who is Gary? And what role did they play with Jake? Boy, this guy's got a whole bunch of people.
He does, yeah. Actually, it was bigger. These are two friends of Jake, mm-hmm. and they're just normal people. They're not spies or anything like that. I say they're just divers that know Jake, because Jake has his double life. He's MI6, but also he has a normal mm-hmm. life where he's a diver. And so these two, they're actually based on people, two friends of mine that I haven't seen for a long time. One of them I've seen last year, but the other one not for like 15 years. And I used to dive with these guys. So Gary was a guy called Simon, and then there's Klaus, who's Danish. And they're kind of normal divers. And initially there were two other characters who we used to dive with, but there were too many, so I cut them from it. And at the end, when Jake needs help, and Nadia needs help, she mm-hmm. realizes she cannot do this on her own. She really is fiercely independent. She doesn't want to rely on anybody, but she realizes if she's to do this to get her sister back, she has to enlist these people. And okay, Jake is MI6, but the others there are just normal people. And so she brings them in. She tells mm-hmm. them, you don't have to do this. But they say, well, we're going to do it because we're friends of Jake. And they mm-hmm. get an inkling of the stakes. Jake doesn't tell them everything about what the rose is, but they realize this is a really big mm-hmm. deal, that if this falls into the wrong hands, then it's global. So they get involved. So, again, it's like I say, it's where normal people step mm-hmm. up. Yeah, so they don't have a big role. They're not massive heroes, but they help Nadia mm-hmm. Retrieve the rose. Yeah.
Well, there's somebody that we haven't spoken about, and because he thinks about him all the time, tell us about Sean and Jake and what happened to him, and why does he tell Nadia about it?
Yeah, so...
That was sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a bit of a spoiler, but Jake has his dark secret, and mm-hmm. basically his son drowned during a diving accident, and Jake mm-hmm. blames himself mainly because he wasn't there. He'd had a cold that day, And so he couldn't dive because you can't dive with the cold. And his son went diving with a couple of people he trusted, but it went bad. It went wrong. Where it happened in the book is actually a place where a number of people have drowned. About 16 people have drowned in this quarry. And I used to dive there, and it is a dangerous place. You practice deep diving there, and every now and again the regulator closes it because there's been a fatality. But so Jake, that was his son, and his son is internalized in his mind, so occasionally he talks to him, or when Jake is trapped in a wreck and thinks he's going to die. You know, he's visualizing his son, saying, you know, okay, I'm coming. So it's quite heart wrenching.
It is.
You know, because he's lost his son, and you really wonder. It's almost like he has a death instinct, Jake, because part of him almost wants to die to join his son. But those were tough scenes to write. Actually, they're not easy scenes to write. Yeah.
Well, that brings it more to life, and why he would even want to help her, what he was thinking, and it distracts him. It's almost like he has a death wish, and I'm saying, no, you can't do that. What question does Kandinsky ask of her, and why does she think it's an impossible one to answer?
Oh, you're going to have to remind me, Fran, which question you're referring to, because my head's in book three right now, so, yeah.
In book two, well, he asks her to do something, and she doesn't know how to answer him, I guess. So we can come back to that. Doesn't matter. Why does one seem to come between them and her real agenda? She's horrible.
Lauren?
She seems to interfere into everyone. How dare she do that? Really?
She's, I made Lauren into a real bitch. Sorry about
that. She is a real horror. I don't like her at all. You can kill her off.
She's
hot. Yeah.
She's hardcore, but she's useful. She becomes in book two. You see the value of Lorne, actually, but she is quite. I'd say she has a lot of issues, and she kind of wanted Jake, and she's incredibly career driven, very very professional, ultra professional, but to a fault. And she pushes Jake, and she pushes Nadia, she pushes everyone. So she gets things done, she's very successful at what she does, but nobody really likes her. So she gives people pain every now and again.
She's giving me pain too, really, seriously.
Wait till book two.
Question. I have my review in front of me, so it's refreshing my brain too. This is good. He gave her. Kandinsky gave her 72 hours to get this thing back. Right. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, he's horrible. But he's not the one that wants it. Somebody else wants this. Somebody is controlling him to get it. Right. Somebody else.
yep. So there's. No, there's a bunch of players after it. And it's it keeps you guessing till the end.
Well, you know, we're not going to tell them who wants it. You're going to have to read the first book and then the second and then the third if you want to know what really happens. Okay,
we've
got Nadia, who is really smart, and she's going to take care of Danton and Adamson in her own ways. So what are the different locations of the dives, and which one is the most paramount to the story? Because this story took place in a whole bunch of different places.
Yeah, so there's the dive in the Thames when they first steal the rose, which is quite dramatic. It happens at night. There's a helicopter coming in. They attack the helicopter with a drone. A drone drops into the Thames, and Nadia's waiting underwater in the Thames and has to retrieve it from the helicopter. And the rotors are still turning underwater, so it's quite a. And there's a barge bearing down on them, so it's quite a tight scene. Then that's a kind of very start. It's a bit James Bondish. But then a lot of the other diving is down in the Scillies, on the west coast. There's the dive in Norway. Which is based on a real dive. That's with Jake. And that's where I actually blacked out, as does Jake in the... In fact, one of the reviewers of the book, before it's published, said this scene seems so real. Did it happen to you? And I said, yes. She said, oh, my God. So, and then, yeah, so most of the dives happen then in the Scilly Isles. But there's also scenes in Frankfurt. There's quite a few scenes in Moscow. Mm. Even a scene towards Siberia. So mm-hmm. it does move around a bit, and books 2 and 3 move around even more, actually. They go further afield. But I really, most of the diving happens in the Scilly Isles on these wrecks, because that's where I did a lot of diving down there. So, yeah.
Well, maybe I'm going to get an oxygen mask when I read the next one when you send it to me. Because I might need it, actually. So, we have about 9 minutes. So what happens to the Elise, and how does Navia come into play? They wind up in a bad situation, both of them.
Yeah, so Danton is gone to the Scillies to find Nadia, but mm-hmm. he can't get to Nadia, but he realizes there's this girl, Elise, who is linked to Nadia, so he kidnaps Elise. Mm-hmm. And does bad things, and so Nadia has to go and rescue Elise with the help of Jake. And of course, there's this, you know, Jake had a thing with Elise once, and Elise hates Nadia, so there's this bizarre rescue situation. Well, not a very tense rescue situation where there's a lot of emotions all around, and at the center of it, there's Danton, who is a very mean, sadistic killer. And Nadia is trying to just make sure that she ends him. That's what she wants to do. Almost to the extent that she, in that moment, she doesn't care about the rose anymore, and even catches. She just knows that this situation has gone so bad. She just has to end it, because otherwise, you know, Elise will be killed, and maybe Jake will be killed, and so that becomes the priority in that scene. That for me is one of the toughest scenes. Yeah.
I can't wait to see what you're going to do in the next one, how tough that's going to be. Oh my God. I mean, seriously, really.
I've been told it's tougher. Well, on the front cover of the next book, it has a picture of Chernobyl, because part of it happens actually in Chernobyl.
Nice. So we have about 7 minutes, so I have to ask this question because I found it on my review just now. What is the significance of the seals, and why does she say they would find a way to survive? What is special or unique about their training? I thought that was interesting.
Okay, so seals. The U.S. Navy SEALs. They're like the top of the top. You know, the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly training in sort of water-based and underwater tactics and warfare. So, yeah, Adamson, the CIA guy, he calls in two SEALs who are actually mercenaries, and to get them to basically take the rose from Nadia. So at the end, Nadia is getting the rose, finally, and these SEALs appear underwater to take it from her. And they're armed with spear guns, so Nadia and Jake have to survive this attack. So she says they would find a way to survive just because they're so well trained that even though they're in the open seas, they'd be able to find a way to stay afloat, and probably they have flares with them that they can send off, and so there's something called an EPIRB, which is a beacon you can switch on, which means the rescue services can find you. So she thinks they'll find a way to survive. Of course, that isn't necessarily what happens in the book, but they are very tough. I'll say that the last few chapters I wrote in one go. I was telling somebody, I just sat down basically for about 10 hours and wrote the finale, because it has this, I think, a real page turner feel. It's very hard to put down the last few chapters, and it's because I just wrote it in one go, in one day. Obviously, I edited it tons after that, but it was all just one long scene broken into three chapters, and everything came together. So, yeah.
Well, it's
quite
right,
happy with
I'm
the ending.
I'm not going to tell anybody more than that.
Yeah.
So we have about 5 minutes. So when creating the ending, we know there's another sequel. So you created the last few scenes with a surprise ending. So, without telling too much, what's next for Nadia? And we're not going to tell anybody where she winds up at the end of the book because it's none of their business. If they want to know, they got to read it. And if they want to know what happened to Katya, you better read it too because you're going to go, what? So what's next for her? He dropped out again. I don't know if he's going to call back. But the next book is called 37 Minutes. And it's going to be really exciting. And Barry said that he's going to print out another copy for me. And I'm hoping that he does so that I can also join the tour. Cheryl, I hope he can. I'm going to give it another minute. I don't know why his phone from France keeps dropping out, but whatever. And I wanted to know where we could learn more about his work. And I imagine if I look it up on my phone, I can tell you that he's on Amazon and probably Barnes & Noble and probably a whole lot of sites. And I'm going to look and see if I can find his website right now so that I can read it. Okay, I'm going to go on to Barry Cohen. And I think he would probably have his own website and everything. I don't know if he's going to be able to call back, but we're going to find out. Okay, Barry Cohen. And this is really surprising that he keeps getting knocked off. And that's weird. Okay. They have the wrong person on here. He's the author of 66 Metroherias. And he's back again.
Sorry, I don't know what happened again.
I don't know what happened. That's so weird.
No, don't worry. So you asked me what happens in the next one. So very, very quickly, it starts 2 years, 2 years after the end of book one. And she is called back in because a Russian submarine has been hijacked, and some terrorists have seized a nuclear weapon, a nuclear missile, basically from the submarine. And she is called back in to intercept them with a group of Russian commandos. And she has to enter via the torpedo tube. They need somebody really small and thin. And so that's why they call her in. At least that's why you think they call her in. There's another reason, of course. But that's the way the
book
starts.
Okay, I want to correct something I said before. What's not 37 minutes, it's 37 hours. And
37
I told everybody
hours,
that you're going to print out a copy for me so I can join the blog tour.
And
before we
end,
before we, God forbid, get disconnected again, where can we learn more about you and your work, and what's your website? Because I tried to find it.
Okay, it's simple. It's jfkerwin.com. So
okay,
it's actually
my
dad's my dad's initials, Joseph Francis, and then Kerwan, KIRWAN.com, and everything's there in the book. And if people want a newsletter, they can sign up. So everything's there.
Well, I want to thank you so much for today, and I hope it gets warmer there. It's 90 degrees where I am. I have
Whoa.
To tell you. I mean, my phone is saying one thing, but I can honestly tell you, no, it says 83. But in about an hour, it's going to be 90, and tomorrow it's going to be worse. But that's okay, because, yeah, that's the purpose of air conditioning. What can I tell you? But 37 hours is coming out, and I hope that you ask Cheryl, who's listening, hi, Cheryl, to set up an interview with me, because everybody's going to want to hear the next part of the book. And I'm excited. So thank you so very much. I want everyone in the whole world to have a nice day. And, you know, like I said, Labor Day is coming. My birthday is in September, so you could buy a couple of people books. You know, 66 Metro for my birthday. That'll be okay, too. I really don't mind. And if you're bored and you don't know what to do and it's raining, take out a book and read. It'll be a much better place than watching television and listening to some of the things that are on the news. This is much more interesting. So thank you so much, and everybody have a nice day, and bye.
Thank you so much, friend. Bye.